Yeah.
Like, I pay your wages. Let me rob this bank.
I'm sure you'd probably be told no.
Really?
Yeah, I think you might be.
But people told me in a football song. If you had to look up win ugly in the dictionary, it might well say Reading 2, Wolves 1. It wasn't the prettiest of 3 points, but it was certainly one of the biggest we've had for a long while, as Reading got the job done on a mud bowl, dust bowl, sand bowl, whatever bowl. It certainly wasn't a football pitch, but as I said, we got the job done, and we'll talk about that win right here on the Tile SM podcast, episode number 121. Hello, my name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetilesend.com. Thank you once again for taking the time to download and listen to the show. And before I introduce my two co-hosts this afternoon, a big, big thank you to everyone who has supported the show via our crowdfunding campaign at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/thetilesend. And a big thank you to Derek Walmsley and Richard Holloway, who've both stepped up to the plate this week. They've gone the extra mile. They've put their hand in their pocket and go, you know what? I'm sick of getting this for free. I'm going to give you a little bit of money for it instead. And it's very much appreciated, as always. Done to everyone who supports the show as well. As Westy's phone goes I'm going to leave this in the show.
Unprofessional joke on the podcast.
Unprofessional, as always.
You see, if you donate to the Patreon campaign, maybe I can pay, you know, Westy to turn his phone on silent.
I did say I had turned it on as well on silent, obviously.
You did?
No, I didn't.
Well, as you've just heard, Mr. Alan West is one of our guests today. Westy, welcome back.
Hello, nice to be back. Like I said, I'm getting a bit of a cold today, so I sound a bit deeper than usual. Hear me sniffing, it's not me crying after that first stuff.
And joining him is Tyler Sten, deputy editor, Johnny Williams, hello.
Yeah, good afternoon. I want to find these people that are sick of getting something for free and feel that they have to pay for it.
Well, you know, it's like the moralness, you know.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree.
Thank you. Thank you.
All this equipment in here is very much improving the sound quality of the show.
It does.
I feel.
We can't get rid of Westy's cold, but, you know, we'll work on that.
Yeah.
You know, donate enough money and we'll find a cure for the common cold. We'll do that one. Anyway, lots to discuss, gentlemen, this week, including that 2-1 win over Wolves. So let's delve into it. Let's get into that recap.
View from the Tarhurst end.
Recapping this week's championship action.
So, as I mentioned at the top of the show, guys, this was a pretty ugly win. If ever I saw one, I don't know if you two will disagree with me. If you do, I would like to question what game you're watching. 38 minutes into this game before we had a single shot on goal, I was chatting to one of our other co-hosts, Handbags Harris, asking whether that was the most boring 45 minutes we've ever seen at the Mineski Stadium. He put forward a couple of games of the Rodgers era, but I think this tops it all. What say you?
Yeah, possibly, but, well, not wishing to justify it, but I think you've got two teams that both came into the game on the back of losing runs. Reading, you know, obviously having lost to Huddersfield and then having lost to Brighton, and what all they wanted was to get a nice, solid, easy win out the way. Wolves, on the other hand, came into the game in absolutely terrible form. What, 5 or 6 losses in a row against the likes of Burton and against some decent teams as well. So, you know, I think you're not exactly in a situation like that going to get two teams going gung-ho. You are going to get two teams being a bit cagey, just trying to do enough, just trying to, you know, almost get a confidence-boosting win no matter how you get it. Now, that doesn't justify the fact that it was an absolutely turgid first half, and I think, obviously, some shouts about the way we play certainly coming into that as well. But, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, it's 3 points no matter how you get it, and it's 3 points towards, hopefully, some improvement in the playoffs.
Yeah, up to 63 points in the table now. But Westy, what about you? Where does that rank on the boring meter?
Wow, that was boring could be. I think the first half, the shot that we did have, I think was from the free kick, Swifty.
Straight into the keeper's eyes.
And it was a poor shot to even count as a shot on target. And I will say this about Reading. I quite like the fact that they try and keep the ball. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's the energy they have, the players that haven't got the ball. It's all very pass to me sideways. There's no dynamic runs. There's no someone thinking, oh, I'll take a gamble here. It's very
There's nothing
unpredictable,
safe. Is there?
Yeah, it's very safe. It's pass, 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 and let's try and bore the other team to death, which has worked. And I don't want to sound ungrateful. but sometimes you want to be entertained. And I know Yap was on about the fans getting behind him, stuff like that. It's very difficult to support a team that are doing 50 passes in their own half.
Well, we had an opinion piece up on the Tullis Den last week from the inspector who took two of his young grandchildren to the Brighton away game. And that was kind of his point. He was like, I don't know how I'm supposed to convince them to be Reading fans when they have to watch that, because unfortunately there's nothing for them to get on their feet about. There's nothing for them to be excited about.
No, there's no joy. If you sit and watch Leeds are a great team to watch because they don't have the ball a lot of the time, but when they do get it, they run, and there's players running off the ball, and they've got wingers that try and put their players on, and it's exciting to watch. And I've known we played recently in Stam said I don't want to win games like that. Well, I think the Leeds fans are quite enjoying winning games like that. And well, I watch Leeds and I enjoy watching them, but I don't enjoy watching Reading. There's not many games this year that I can say I've sat there and thought, actually, I've really enjoyed that game, other than the Fulham game a few weeks ago.
Well, actually, I'll go ahead of what we usually do and I'll read out a little bit of Stam's quotes because it's interesting on this point. He said, sometimes we need to understand that we have problems in keeping the ball and we're trying to play out from the back. Then sometimes it's a better solution to play more directly up to Jan and try to win that second ball and then start playing.
I can see what he's saying, but I think, well, obviously I don't know what goes on the training pitch, but it seems like they don't put enough work into that second ball thing, because it does tend to be that when we're under pressure and we have to hoof it long, we just give away the ball, and the only way that we seem to know how to keep the ball is by this slow passing at the back. I mean, I think Jan Kermigan isn't the ideal solution if you want to do that. He's not the tallest, he's not the best at keeping the ball, but there doesn't seem to be a plan B, and it very much seems drilled into this team. Whatever Yap says after the match, it does seem drilled into them. Keep the ball, play it safe, rather than pumping it long and, you know, trying to get something from Jan or from a flick-on or, you know, from one of their mistakes.
Yeah, they're capable of doing that. But like I said, there's no dynamic run. You don't see a Reading player make a dynamic run from midfield or from the wing. How many goals this year have we scored where the ball's been played over the top of the defender and someone's run for on goal? Mm. It's just not happened. And we've got plenty of pace in the team. There's no excuse, really.
And when we did see that, it was against teams like Burton, like Wigan. I remember that, you know, they blitzed Wigan away in the first few minutes, didn't they? They went 2-0 up.
20 minutes,
yeah. But you can understand why they do stick to that mantra, and Stam clearly is saying, look, I'm not telling them just to play rigidly. No, they do have a little bit of freedom, and I think they did do that a bit more in the second half.
He did mention actually after the game that I think someone put that to him, that where's the runs coming from, where's the movement when we've got the ball, because it's all very give it to me and I've got my back to goal. And he did say, look, I tell the players all the time to try and make them runs. They're just not doing it. So surely they'd be doing it by this time.
I think, like I said earlier, coming back to the situation of what's happened in the last few games, I think the players just need to get that little bit more confidence up to make those gambles. Because if you think back to the Brighton game, all three of their goals came on the counter-attack pretty much, which came from either us losing the ball in dangerous areas or players making those runs, it not working and us being out of position. So I think it's very much something that does need to be worked on. And, you know, like we said, the players just needed that confidence boost in win to say, yes, we can score. Yes, we can beat teams, because you come off the back of a 3-0 defeat, admittedly out of promotion contender, although it looks like they're choking now, possibly Brighton. And you just need that confidence back. And, you know, I think you have to remember that the players aren't machines. They need to know that they can do these things.
No, and on the flip side, I agree with you there, Johnny. On the flip side, to win a game like that is a good win, because we didn't play well all through the match, I didn't think. I thought a lot of players had a real off day, but we still managed to win. So
yeah, a cliche that handbags would hate, but, you know, hallmark of a good team is winning ugly. And Reading did just that.
And it was a massive game as well. It was a game they had to win because there's bigger fish to fry coming.
Mm. Absolutely. I'll read out all the rest of Yap's post-match comments we've picked out. He says, the players have worked very hard and they work hard in every game, and it's tough because the pitch is heavy. But we got the result and that's the most important thing today. We'd have liked to have a better feeling about the game overall and how we played. But this moment and with where we are, points are very important. And as you said, Johnny, and yourself said, Westy, that was what mattered. They had to get those 3 points. And they've just done what they've done all season, haven't they? How often have they been outshot in games? How often have they, maybe you can even say, outfought? But they just find that way to win.
Yeah, they score when they get opportunities, which has been great all season, really, in general.
Well, the first goal comes from a little bit of a... In weird circumstances, I'm going to ask you both here, do you think Jan Kermigan meant it? Danny Williams taking a pot shot from outside the box into the path of Kermigan. He sticks out a foot and diverts it past Takimi.
Definitely. It wasn't like the Newcastle goal.
Yeah, I think he meant it a little bit more than that.
I think he see the ball coming and he just stuck his foot on it. He aimed it towards goal. As far as I'm concerned, he knew exactly what he was doing there.
Mm. Yeah, well, perfect. I think it's just one of those predatory striker things. I mean, as a striker, especially one of his experience, you know, almost that the goalkeeper will have gone already. And so he just knows that if he gets a touch on it, diverts it the other way, it's probably going in.
Yeah, it's a good finish, I thought.
Absolutely. Well, the eighth goal of the season for him, he's doing fantastically well. But that's just when you think, okay, first few minutes of the second half, we've got this lead, great. Wolves aren't looking any great shakes in front of goal. We'll sit on this for a bit. No, Wolves pretty much go straight up the other end and get a goal. Yapsdam not happy in the build-up to this one, gents. He's claiming there's a handball. You've seen it back.
I thought there was handball, but again, it didn't excuse our lacklustre defending. I thought if you look at, you've just seen the goal before you come on air there, and I've seen it obviously live, there was a lot of players there that seemed to be wandering around, not really putting in too much of an effort to stop the goal.
They were almost distracted by the handball, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they were. I think they got distracted. And again, that's unprofessional as far as I'm concerned. You should be on it until the whistle goes. And they're professional players, they should know better than me.
Johnny, handball for you?
It's a tough one. I don't think so at that speed and, you know, in that situation. If that was in the penalty area, you probably wouldn't say it was a penalty, which I don't agree with making those different decisions elsewhere on the pitch. But yeah, no, like Westy said, I think there was too many players just sort of, just all over the place after that, really. They didn't really understand it. And I think Joey's a bit out of position to start. It almost looks like Wolves have too many players for us. But then when you see the guy put in the cross, he's got Tooman on him. The striker's got Gunter and McShane on him as well. It looked like we were outnumbered, but we weren't. And I think it was shocking defending all over from the first pass to the finish.
Yeah, just a complete switch off. And I mean, I'd not blame Tyler Blackett for this as an individual, but he is a pinnacle for me of players that just, he just seems to be lethargic and switched off far too often. He's had some good games at centre-back recently. I thought he's played quite well. But he just, to me, he just wants to put in about 5% more effort to even be average sometimes.
I'm just not convinced him as left-back, especially at home, when you're looking to get forward more. Every time Blackett goes down that left-hand side, I don't think he's going to put in a good cross.
No.
Have you seen him put in a good cross this season? I'm not criticising you. I'm being honest. I can't remember a particularly great Tyler Blackett cross this season.
No, and I think if you look at when he has played left back at home, I think teams are starting to target him because they're putting fast players up against him, knowing that he's got this capability of switching off quite often.
Well, from the moment Wolves equalised, I thought they were the better team.
I thought he was in trouble then, I must admit.
They were coming forward, they had a few near misses, but as mentioned, Reading get their opportunity, they make the double switch, they bring on Yaku Mate and Lewis Graben. Mate wins the foul, Swift with a great free kick and a fantastic header from Paul McShane. Somebody asked me from the Fulham version of the Tarlhurst End over on SB Nation. They were like, they said, well, Reading by the algorithms and stats should be 22nd in the table. How are you fifth? And I said, because we make the big moments count. Sometimes you get lost in stats and think, oh, well, you know, predicted this, predicted that, expected this. At the end of the day, football's about making your big moments count and the opposition not making their big moments count.
It's a thin margin in the Championship of winning games and losing games. And luckily, when Reading have been given opportunity or made themselves opportunities, they've scored them. And if you look at this game, it was a set piece and it was a deflected goal, basically, that won us the match. But we still took it against Brighton a week before. I mean, we could have been leading that game if Behrens would have put the ball in the back of the net. Keeper saves it. They've gone down the other end. They're 1-0 up. And that's just the way it works.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got to make the big moments count, like you said.
So they did. Mike Williamson getting a late red card as well. A couple of other talking points from the game. We saw a full debut. Fradrian Popper, the Romanian winger, coming in for Gareth McCleary. We'll get onto him in News Bites. But Westy, what did you make of Adrian's debut?
I thought, I don't know if it's you that told me this, but I remember you saying a few weeks back that Steaua Bucharest has said that he's all pace and that he can't cross a ball. And I think when you watch him, he looks quick, but he looks like another one of his wingers might end up making the wrong decision more often than not. I hope I'm wrong. But again, with foreign players coming into a different league, it could take him 6 months to get up to the pace of things. And I think he looked lively. He looked like he could be a threat, but he didn't show me anything that I thought, wow, you should start every week.
Yeah, Jack Killick said, I thought on Saturday Popper was probably one of Reading's best players. Worked extremely hard and had some moments of real quality. What are your thoughts on his performance? Well, you've heard Westy.
He started well. He started going well. I thought he looked lively.
Reminded me a lot of Sammy Iago, not just because he's very small.
Yeah.
Ooh, Sammy Iago.
Yeah, but he had that sort of same sort of movement and bustle, and he's got quite a lot of strength. Again, I think this happens. I think sometimes you think, oh, these small players can't handle it, but I almost think it's the opposite.
Yeah.
Because they're so used to being smaller than everyone that they've learned ways to deal with it.
Yeah, I think he could be an asset to you, but I just think he's more likely to be an impact substitute.
I don't think we'll see him and Kelly in the team much together, mainly for the set pieces.
Him, Kelly and Behrens all in the same team. You've got a very small side all of a sudden.
You have to stack them on top of each other at set pieces, won't you?
Yeah, another rotation of the midfield trio. We saw Swift, Williams, and I can't even think who played. Oh, not...
Vandenberg.
Yes, Joey was back. I asked this question to Mark last week, guys. Do you think Stam knows his best midfield trio, or do you think he's literally just... Is he deliberately mixing and matching, or is he just trying to find the right combination?
It does seem a bit strange that, well, since we brought in the new recruits in January and since Joey Vandenberg's come back, our form doesn't seem to have been the best. I'm not sure... I do think there's something to be said for a settled side, and, you know, generally the most successful teams... You know, they don't change their teams because they know what works for them. And I do think that now that Stam's got all these options, more players to keep happy, more options, he's almost confusing himself, confusing the issue. And as much as anything with these players, if you're playing with different players week in, week out, you don't get used to them as much. So, I think we certainly don't know our best three yet.
No, definitely not. But I don't think anyone's made a case for themselves, if that makes sense. I think Swift started the season really well, but since he's got injured, I think he's been well off the boil. And obviously we know he's got quality and we know he can put a good dead ball and we know he can score goals, but he hasn't set the world alight, I don't think. Williams, I thought he didn't play particularly well this weekend, but you know what you get from him. Evans as well, again, another player that's sort of average, you know, he's a 6-7 every game. And Kelly as well, he's had some good games, but he's also had some games where he's been out of it. And I don't think anyone's made a case to be starting every week. And I think Yap's still looking for that combination. And he likes Vandenberg.
He trusts him clearly. I said as soon as last week was over, I said, Joey, we'll be back on the team on Saturday.
Yep.
Because he's what him and Behrens, Stam trust, because he clearly knows from their backgrounds and their footballing pedigree, they know how to play this system. So we'll go to them time and time again, even if maybe they're not the in-form option.
And compared to some of the others, they've got experience, whereas the younger players haven't.
A couple of other talking points. Johnny, one of them, should Wolves have had a goal in the first half? Did the ball cross the line?
Paul Lambert certainly thought so. From the static angle on the TV replays, it certainly does look like it, but... You can't tell really from that sort of angle.
Well, goal line technology will be coming to the Championship, I think, next season. Westy, was it a goal for you?
In real time, by the player's reaction, I thought, oh, it might have crossed the line. From where the linesman was, there's no way he could have possibly seen it. There's too many people in front of him. The referee didn't have a good view. And I think the process died down pretty quickly. Mm. So I'm saying it's one that was too dicey to have given.
Yeah, I'm in the worst possible position in Y25 to take a look at that. But from the TV replays, I'm kind of with you, Johnny. I think it looked to me like there was ball behind the line, but how much?
You need the whole thing over the whole line.
If it had been Reading, I'd have said it went over the line. But...
I'm sure if it was Reading, the club would have brought out they've got all the cameras all around the ground, so they'd have probably been like, this angle. Was definitely over.
Yeah.
Definitely.
At the end of the day, this leaves us still in fifth place in the table. We're still 7 points clear of Fulham, who've still got that game in hand. How do you see the playoff race now, though? Because a lot of teams sort of below Fulham now are really struggling.
Yeah, I think
is it just a fight? Is it four from five now?
Yeah, I think it's whether Fulham can get in it or not, basically. I think it's Reading's and Sheffield Wednesdays and Leeds's and Huddersfield's to lose. I think the other clubs, Norwich, they have far too many inconsistent results. It took a hammering, I think, the other day, if I'm right in saying, they got beat Sheffield Wednesday.
They lost 5-1, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that if you look at the other sides, they're too inconsistent. Fulham look like they can put a run together, so it'd be whether we drop out of it because we don't win enough games, basically, and Fulham keep winning.
Yeah, the only thing with Fulham is, I think, as we said, they've got a far tougher run in than most of the other teams.
Is it
four
Leeds,
of the top six away?
Is it Leeds and Newcastle? I think this week they've got.
Yeah, and I think they've still got to go to a couple of other clubs who are quite high away from home.
Well. Yep.
You know, if we win probably four or five more of our games, we're probably in. In the form we're in at the moment, I certainly don't think we'd have a chance in the playoffs. But we've got an extremely good run in, especially if the relegation fight is decided. By the time we get there, hopefully. So if we can build up a bit of confidence and, you know, start to get playing well and start to get a few good results going into the playoffs, anything could happen.
Yep, anything could happen. I think, yeah, you're probably right. Five games, you got five wins and a draw out of what we got left, we're definitely in the playoffs. I think the stats show it's like 74 points get you in the playoffs. Last 10 years or so.
Yeah.
Most ever 78, I think.
So that would be five wins out of 11 games now?
Yeah, I think five wins pretty much do it. And when you look at who Reading have got to play, you'd hope that they'd be able to do that.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Anyway, it should be a thrilling battle. And the top two still isn't even fully decided after Brighton's wobble this week. Huddersfield's still just 5 points behind and they've played the same number of games now. So that you want those races, I suppose, open as long as possible because you want the teams like Newcastle and Brighton to have
something to fight for. To keep playing, yeah, that's definitely right. And it will help Reading's cause, especially if we were to turn them over to Tuesday night.
Absolutely right. Well, with that, we've got a bit of an injury news to get to, so we'll move on in to News Bites.
Reading News Bites
on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, so one major bit of injury news to get to, and it concerns Gareth McCleary, who was out of the 18 for the Wolves game. Stam commenting to BBC Radio Berkshire at the game, basically saying that Gareth could have played. However, he's been dealing with knee tendon issues and an abdominal issue, and he'd sort of decided that it was best to rest him for this week to keep him fresh for, you know, for later games. So, good news and bad news, gents. I suppose, you know, fantastic news that he could have played if needed. But my worry is, we've seen this before with Gareth, where he sort of plays through niggles. Any concerns for you?
Yeah, again, you've got to look back in his past at Reading, where he has moments where he has a good 2 or 3 months and he's key to the side winning. And then he has these little niggly injury problems and his form dips. And I think he's such an important player for us that you need him to be top level every week, especially getting towards the back end of the season.
Yeah, I think you could see on Saturday, Reading were missing a spark, missing a certain something. And, you know, quite frankly, Gareth McCleary normally is that in a game. He's the one player in that side who you think, you know, he can make something magic happen, whether it's a mazy dribble down the right or a shot from 25 yards. And, yeah, it just looks like Reading missed something when he's not in the side. Now, I know that teams have obviously done their homework and double mark him and, you know, put a lot of pressure on him, but he's still, I think, that one player in the team who you go, right, this guy can make something happen.
Yeah, I think he was up, I can't remember, it was one of the home games more recently where he was up front and I thought he had no impact on the game, and then all of a sudden they put him on the wing and then he was trouncing the right left backs, you know what I mean? I think the experiment with him up front has not really worked. I think he's more important to the team when he plays wide because he's such a big threat from a wide area.
Absolutely. So fingers crossed he can stay fit anyway. We'd certainly need him back. I'm not convinced about playing Popper for the final 11 games of the season. But who knows, could surprise me. Anyway, and one final news bite. The Reading under 23s are into the next round of the Premier League Cup. You might remember the same competition we won a few years ago by beating Man City, so that's all good. But I bring this up mostly because if you head over to thetarlhurstend.com right now, we've got an excellent two-part article looking at the Reading Academy this season, what they've done so far, some of the players to look out for. And I know we've had a few of you sort of write in saying, can we get more info on the Academy? Very much encourage you to go head over. It's still on the near the front, near the top of the main page.
Interestingly enough, my son plays for the Academy side a bit further down. He's only 10. So I've noticed a massive change in the way they're training them now. Because before, it was very much keep the ball, take players on. You don't need to release it. You know what I mean? They just want you to be comfortable having the ball. But my son's a goalkeeper, and they was training the young players exactly the same way that the first team play. Yeah. And that was roll out to the side. Doesn't matter if you lose the ball. If you can see the goal, we're not interested. We're not bothered. And my son actually hit a long ball and they scored from it. And he got chastised. They said, no, you give it to whoever's nearest. But he went, we just scored. I said, no, you give it to whoever's nearest. So, yeah, so well, they definitely changed the way they're training the kids since Yapstam's coming.
It's interesting you said that, because we do have an interview with Lee Heron, the academy manager, that is going to go up in the next couple of weeks. It's going to go up in the next international break. So lots more academy goodness. So I said, this is why we get your feedback. You know, you said you wanted more academy news. So we'll try and get more in if we can, and obviously publish as much as we can up on the website as well.
Yeah, there's definitely been a switch in the way they're training them. I suppose that can only be a good thing as long as you're going to continue that. You know, you're going to have to do it over the next 10 years, play the same sort of football to make it count.
Absolutely. Well, I mentioned your feedback into the show. It's time to get into that portion of today's episode. We'll delve into that mailbag.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Okay, so thank you again to everyone who's contributed to the mailbag via @thetarlhurstend on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. And just before I get into the email as well, I want to give some credit to Sam Story, who wrote that two-piece on the academy that I've mentioned on the website in the last piece. Didn't name check him, not very fair. So, you know, give him his dues. So thank you very much to that, Sam. And hopefully he's going to contribute a few more articles over the season as well to keep you up to date. Anyway, moving on to the appropriately named Henry Redding, who says, hi guys, great show as always. Definitely the best fan pod out there. Thank you very much, Henry. Your fiver is in the post. Do you think it's essential that we go up this season because of the financial situation and also losing players like Swift, Kelly and Moore, etc.? Don't forget we're £65 million in debt. Thoughts? P.S. Yes, my second name is Redding.
Wow.
You're well named.
I don't think it's ever essential that we go up. I mean, you see, there's certainly a lot of teams around there that are in equally bad situations to us, I'd say. In terms of keeping the players, I mean, absolutely. I think someone like Liam Moore will certainly be picked up if we don't go up. John Swift and Liam Kelly, I'm not quite so sure, because I do think, especially with Kelly, some clubs just won't buy him because of his size. And obviously we know that despite that, he's a quality player. And I think ultimately, you know, as you know, in football, players leave and you get new ones in.
Yeah, I don't worry about it so much. You know what I mean? I don't think there's anyone in that side at the moment that anyone above us is thinking, oh yeah, we're having him. You know what I mean? I don't think anyone's that much of a standout player. Liam Moore, yes, but Liam Moore's just dropped out of the Premier League, let's not
forget. Yeah, and on that note, I don't think there's anyone in that team that's irreplaceable either. No. I think we've got some very good players, but I don't think, like when we lost Long and when we lost Sigurdsson, they were like, we're never going to be able to get a player that good at this level.
No.
Well, I mean, you just look at what we're saying about finding the best midfield three, and the fact that we can't definitively put Swift and Kelly in the best midfield three says that they are inherently replaceable at the moment.
I think, yeah, at the moment they're at their level with potential to be much better players.
And if they do get sold, Reading are in the driver's seat because both of them have just signed, you know, new contracts. Swift obviously just signing, Kelly signed his new deal a few months ago. So they can command high fees to them. They're not going to, it's not a case of, oh, they're in the last year of the contract, we've got to get rid of them cheaply.
It's always funny, this sort of thing, because if they was to sell them for, I don't know, 7, 8 million, whatever there was to get for them, and they bought in a striker that's well known in a championship like Rhodes or something, everyone would be saying, oh, what a great bit of business. So I don't worry about losing players because you will lose players.
Well, I'll tell you this as well. I mean, look, we lost Aaron Tischbowler at the start of the season.
Yeah.
Now you'd be thinking, who?
Yeah. I mean, he can't get a game. I mean, his career's on the slide now.
Yeah, not the best move, Aaron. I shouldn't have tried to force your way out of that one.
Great move for Reading, though.
Yeah, bye. Fantastic. To be fair, he could still be a great player, but, you know, should have stayed. Anyway, thank you very much for that, Henry. As far as the finances go, that's the great unknown. We are still waiting for news of the takeover. Stam just put out a comment this week saying, look, it's radio silence. That's the general hold. They're in a holding pattern for whatever reason. We don't know what that is. You know, and we don't really know what the situation is financially. We know that we're losing a lot of money each season, but we don't know how deep the tie pockets go.
Yeah, and I think if you look all through the Championship, there isn't many teams that make money. I think Brighton have gambled on being in the Premier League, and they probably need to get there more than we do.
If Brighton don't get up this year, then they're going to lose a lot of players.
They'd be struggling.
Yeah, same with teams like Derby as well. You look at Derby's wage bill and
theirs must be horrendous, because they've bought a lot of players for big money that are, just want a better
word,
rubbish.
Matty Vidra and Nick Blackman, who are sat there, and between them, I think, have got about four goals for them for a combined 12 million.
I still don't know, sat and watched Vidra all last season, thought, we will give you 8 million for him. I want to give you 8 pence for him. It was shocking.
Obviously, someone sent him the 2014-15 DVD.
They must have done. I'm sure he was great that year, but it's ever like, since, wow.
Bobby Mikhailov getting sent that video of him playing at Wembley.
Yeah.
They think, oh, they play there.
I'm signing tomorrow. 300 grand. What
good job, Wiggy. Anyway, yeah, thank you very much for the email, Henry. Tom Snare says he wants us to discuss the rules on standing within Y26. Now, he brings this up because there was a few incidents in the East Stand on Saturday of fans, particularly towards the front of Y26 and Y25, standing and being told to sit down by the stewards. That's prompted a whole debate whether, you know, why don't the away fans sit down? Why don't the people at the top of the stand get told to stand or sit down? Do either of you two have particularly strong views on this?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, like we say, it's at the back of Y25 and Y26 you stand. And I think it would be a bit hypocritical to say, oh, the away fans should sit down when they're in the Medeski. But we know full well that when Reading go away, they tend to stand up the whole game as well. So I think it's almost just one of these things that's almost an unwritten rule, really, isn't it? I mean, I know it's an all-seater stadium and everyone's encouraged to sit down, but at the same time, they don't. Everyone is fully aware of that. And if you're going to stand up, like if I were to stand up for the whole game in the West Stand, obviously I'd be chucked out and, you know, told to sit down, because no one does that. But when everyone is doing it around you, and there's an unwritten rule to do it, I think fair enough.
The difference is, and I hear this argument quite a lot, is if the away fans are unaccountable, you know what I mean? There's nothing they can really do to them. They stand as a group of 1,000 or so, and no steward's going to go up there and tell them to sit down, because they wouldn't have the balls, for want of a better
word. And also, more importantly, you don't want to rile them up.
Exactly. And not only that, the own fans are accountable, because a lot of them be season ticket holders, so they can just revoke your season ticket. I think it's ridiculous. I can understand the argument where, well, there's other people at the ground that might not want to stand up but have to because you're stood in front of them. But if you're at the back, I think...
Well, this is it. I think this is where it's sort of broken down a bit, because those at the front of the stand are starting to say, well, why are we being told to sit down when the group at the back aren't? And I think they've answered their own question there. When you're at the front, chances are you're going to block the view of someone. Now, if that entire block was standing, I'd go, okay, but there's not.
No.
There are still people sort of towards the middle of Warrior 26 that do sit down. And so if you're standing at the front, you're blocking them or you're forcing them to stand up.
Yeah.
And like you say, Johnny, everybody knows if you've been to Medeski any more than once or twice, if you're at the back of Y25-26, someone's going to be standing up. So people don't go there. But I don't think people who brought season tickets in the last year, maybe last year as well, would have expected that. So I think they've got probably every right to sit there and either say to a steward or the club, can you try and do so? I don't know if that's happened. I don't know if it's in response to a complaint or if it's a council thing or a club thing.
It's a health and safety thing. You're supposed to be sitting down in an all-seater stadium.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like I don't know because it's been quite a recent crackdown and I don't know whether it's a club thing. I don't know where it's come from. We'll do our best to try and get in touch with the club and find out.
Again, it's an argument you don't really want to be having. I've said before, I think some of the students are a little bit overzealous at times. But in general, I think they're pretty much let you get on with it as long as you're not causing too much disruption.
I think the other thing is that the Medeski Stadium is certainly not sold out at the moment, so if you do want to stand up, just move to the back.
To be fair, you don't want to be chucking fans out when you're not selling out.
The two things that do make me laugh are, number one, the argument, the stewards will just want to be seen as big men. I'm like, does this guy or girl who is earning, 40-50 quid maybe a day, they really want all the aggro involved?
Of course
they don't. The other one is when fans chant, "We pay your wages, we'll do what we want," which is exactly the argument I'm going to use the next time I'm stopped by a police officer.
Yeah.
Like, I pay your wages, let me rob this bank.
I'm sure you'd probably be told no.
Really?
Yeah, I think you might be.
But people told me in a football side.
Yeah, I think it's one of those arguments that go round and round. I don't particularly like the stewarding at Reading or a lot of football grounds, but it is what it is. Yeah. Sit down.
And again, in all seriousness, I've got sympathy for those that want to stand up. If they want to create atmosphere and they think it's hypocritical, it is. But it's just the nature of the way things are done. Hopefully, legislation goes through that will allow safe standing in the future and everyone will be happy. I noticed Orlando City in the MLS opened their new 25,000 stadium today and it's got beer holders on your terrace and a designated pyro area.
It
sounds like the dream.
It's how it should be.
Yeah.
Well, I know. I think it's in Miami, in Florida. They're opening up a new NFL stadium. It's got like a swimming pool outside, and you can just do all these sorts of things. Like, it's all about the experience.
Don't think I want to go in the Medeski swimming pool in January against Wigan.
To be fair, though, if there would have been other entertainment other than the football on Saturday, I would have gone and done it as well. You know what I mean? If I had an arcade there or anything, really, I'd off it on a
bloke sat in front of me, literally didn't turn up for the second half. I think they just stayed in the Jazz.
I don't blame them.
Anyway, thank you for that. I said, Tom, we'll do our best to actually get, you know, we did the interview with Mark and Adam Benson from the club a few months ago. We'll try and get in touch with them and find out this. And obviously Star have regular management meetings. Write to Star because they are in direct correspondence with the club. They go to these management meetings. They can raise these points. That's what Star are there for. Obviously, we'll do our bit as well on the Tyler's end. But I very much encourage you, if you are and you've got these first-hand accounts or you want explanations, write in, because unless you write in and ask for the answers, you're not going to get any. So I very much encourage that. Alex makes a point. He says, we are much stronger with five at the back than four.
Yeah, I completely agree, because I think, like we said, Tyler Blackett, his best position from what we've seen over the last 6 months or so is as the left-sided centre-back in that back three. And I think Jordan Nabita thrives a little bit more from being that wing-back, because he's got that pace to get up and down. I still don't think he's 100% defensively, but certainly going forward, he gives you a lot more. And yeah, you know, I think we're a lot more solid at the back. And often when we play sort of like a 4-4, a 4-5-1, you see someone like George Evans or Joe Vandenberg fall back into that anyway, which kind of makes it into a 3 and gives you that little bit more rigidity at the back.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Vandenberg played centre-back against Fulham, and I thought it was probably his best game he'd had for a long time.
Yeah,
because he was allowed to go and press the ball, whereas if he plays in a 2, he tends to get caught out quite a lot, and the other 2 can cover for him if he's in a 3. I think, I agree with that. I think we do look better when we've got 3 centre-backs.
Yeah, I think so as well. Let's Tyler Blackett, as you say, playing his best position, and Abita was doing well as a wing-back as well, so I'd like to see it, but Stam's clearly going to go horses for courses. Wilbo Swags says, my submission for discussion is simply... phew. And yeah, I think we'll agree with that.
I think we could not disagree with that.
And Tim Redmayne says, I always used to see that A33 sign and it always gave me a buzz and focus driving past. Why not bring it back? You know, he's talking about that sign that's on the A33 that says Reading's next game versus da da da.
Oh, is that gone?
I this was my reaction to it. I don't think I've seen it have the opposition on it for a while. Westy, can you confirm?
I don't think I've seen it, so mate, it must have been removed.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, I did always like it. I think
cutting the cloth.
Yeah, yeah. The
can't get a new board made up with the new team names.
Yeah, we lost like an R and an A, and you know can't name most teams.
I'd say Elm Park back in the day when they used to have to slide them in. That was even better.
I think they still do on that A33 sign.
Well, maybe it's the same sign.
Absolutely. Maybe Tesco's are stopping them putting up. I don't know. Yeah, it's nice. I like all this little personal touches like that, but you can sort of understand why they don't.
Yeah. Maybe they should put a big arrow on it on a Saturday to tell you to go to football when you're driving down the A33 to try and fill the ground up.
That's a great big Vegas-style sign.
Like that one on Phoenix Nights. You remember that when they had a big sign outside Phoenix Night and step into whatever it was?
Or just like this way to the car park for Costco. Sort of
yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Divert around.
Like a maze and you end up in the ground. We'll have to try.
Fantastic. Again, another one we'll bring up the next time we speak to the club. So big thanks to everyone who's got in touch via all the usual channels at the Tarlest End on Twitter, thetarlestend@gmail.com and facebook.com/tarlestend. And as I mentioned over the past few weeks, if you want to get involved with the website, send us an email if you want to get into writing or you've got some thoughts, even if it's just a one-off opinion piece. We're always open for new writers. It's what we're here for. We're by fans, for fans. So get in touch with that email address, thetarlestend@gmail.com, and let us know. As mentioned earlier, we had Sam who's got on board covering the academy, so we're always after new writers. So please get in touch. And again, as mentioned at the top of the show, thank you to everyone who's contributed to that Patreon campaign at patreon.com/tarlestend. I joke about, you know, giving the extra money for something we do for free. This, you know, the show is free for you guys. It's not quite free for us. We do have to pay for stuff, you know, supplies and audio equipment and bits and bobs. So it does go a long way, and it really does also give us that warm, fuzzy feeling. So thank you very much for that. Speaking of warm, fuzzy feelings, I don't think we're going to get one on Tuesday as Newcastle turn up at the Mad Stad. We'll discuss that just after this.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
So the Toon Army roll into town on Tuesday night. I'm sure they... Well, in fact, I know they've sold out the South Stand, so there'll be a 4,000-odd Geordies. They're cheering their team on towards another 3 points that will probably lead them to the league title. But can Reading stop that momentum, Johnny?
No.
Okay, Westy, can Reading stop that momentum?
Well, I think we all hope they could, but I'm doubting it. After seeing on Saturday Reading, I think if you play up against a decent side and you're that lapsadaisical, then you will get hammered.
A week ago, we thought maybe Newcastle were having a bit of a wobble. You know, we thought, oh, they've got to go to Brighton, Huddersfield and Reading. They beat Brighton 2-1. They beat Huddersfield 3-1. So I'm hoping Reading aren't 4-1.
No, let's just hope we can make a good account of ourselves. Like I said, I've got a bit of a theory for you. I mean, everyone's complaining about our pitch. Is our pitch actually helping us? Because our own record is pretty good.
No. Ordinarily, I'd say yes, but it's such a shocking state.
But we're winning.
It's awful.
On it, constantly.
It's embarrassing, though.
Yeah, but we're winning on it.
Yeah, I don't think it's helping us win, though. We didn't create a shot for 38
minutes. Generally
win
more games at home than they do away. However, stat attack for you. Newcastle United have got 35 points at home this season and 41 away. So they've got more points away than they have at home.
So going away and winning at who were then first and third is a...
I think for comparison, sorry, 41 points they've got. The next best is Brighton with 29. So they've won four more games away from than any other team.
In fact, when you look at some of their own games, they've lost to a few sort of shocking teams, haven't they? They've had some weird results.
Blackburn have done the double over them.
Yeah, again, that's a weird one straight away. So they are beatable. They're not world beaters by any stretch of the imagination, but they're not going to be easy to beat. Let's put
bookmakers have this. Reading are 14-5. The draw is 5-2. Newcastle the favourites at just better than evens at 11-10.
Gosh, that's tempting.
Yeah, it's no good me rattling off the names in this Newcastle team. They're all pretty great.
Yeah, like sometimes when you get these championship teams, you think, who's he? Who's he? With Newcastle, you know every single one.
And
of
they've
them.
Not even got Dwight Gale fit at the moment. So there we go. We'll go into predictions in a minute. But after that one, we go up to Lancashire. On Saturday, we travel to face Preston. They're currently ninth in the league. 11 points behind us at the moment. Haven't played the same number of games. Their form's been pretty good, though. They've won three of their last six, two draws. They were beaten on Saturday by Fulham. That was away from home, but they've not lost at Deepdale in 2017. So a tough proposition. And it's a few more sort of familiar faces in that line at Westie. Some established championship players and around the league for years.
Old school championship players. Again, a Preston, nice steady side, don't they? They're one of these teams that could cause an upset higher up. But again, they're not, I know they've had some good results recently, but not consistent. And it's a team that Reading could really kill off if they were to get something decent against them. Even a draw, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a ground we've had a little bit of success at over the years. The bookmakers, Preston are 11 to 8. The draw is 12 to 5. Reading, slight outsiders at 15 to 8. Johnny, even, how do you see that one going?
In terms of Preston, well, I think they're still going to have the belief that they can just about make some noise and get into the playoffs. And certainly, you know, with 13, 14 games left or whatever it is, they know that if they get a result against us, that's almost a six-pointer for them, really, isn't it? Because it's takes a point.
They need to win. Yeah. If they want any chance to catch Reading, they've got to beat us.
Yeah, but it takes a point off us as well as giving the points to them. So I think they will certainly be up for it, especially, you know, having lost to another rival at Fulham last week. So it'll be a tough game. Very tough game.
I mean, they're on, as I said, they're 11 points behind us. They're on 52 points. Mm. So to reach that 75-point mark, you're looking at eight wins.
I mean, I'd say it's almost impossible for them, but they will still have a bit of belief in them, certainly. Yeah.
Okay, let's go prediction league time then. And four out of five of us predicted a win for Reading over Wolves, but none of us got the score right. Westy, you were the lone dissenter. You went for a draw. So no point for you this week. So that leaves the standings with Johnny on 31, and then myself, Handbags, and Charles all tied on 28. Westy, unfortunately, got work to do, mate.
I'm looking at relegation here, aren't I?
Unfortunately so.
Again, another season.
Did we mention the loser buys the beers?
That's all right. Have I got to buy it for the reporter as well, seeing as he's left? Does that count?
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to go.
London prices as well.
Exactly. Got to go to the Emirates. Okay, well, Westy, as your bottom, we'll let you pick first. Right, or do you want to go last, actually?
No, I'll go first. Don't worry about it. I don't think I'm winning. I'm not worried about it, to be honest. I'm going to go 2-0 Newcastle.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go 1-0.
Johnny?
I said about Newcastle's away record earlier. We have the second best home record.
No.
So just in the interest of fairness,
I'm
going to go for a 3-0 win to Newcastle off the back of that.
Yeah, great stuff.
Amazing.
And a 2-2 draw at Preston, even though we've only drawn two away games this year.
Okay, I'm saying we're going to lose 1-0 at home.
Optimistic.
God, it's positive, absolutely. And, for the fans, by the fans. Yeah.
We're not those people that Yapstam talked about that are fully getting behind the team. Well, sorry.
We're there watching them.
I'd say we're realists, put it that way.
And I'm going to say be optimistic. I think we're going to win at Preston. I'm also going to say a 1-0 win at Preston. So I will get the thoughts of Handbags and Charles ahead of the next show, which will probably be Monday or Tuesday. So again, thank you very much for joining us, and for everyone who's contributed, not just to Patreon but into the mailbag, and everyone who reads the site, and to you two gents for turning up and supporting us this week. Hope to have you back soon.
Yes, lovely.
Yeah, I feel like we've been rested and refreshed for the end of the season push.
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of a veteran, so I suppose I do need more rest than most. Yeah,
got to manage. You're like Sol Campbell, you don't turn up to train anymore.
No, Paul McGrath, I don't play, I've got bad knees.
Or Anton Ferdinand.
Yeah.
Just never fit.
There's a list of people that don't train too much, isn't there?
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. As I said, fingers crossed they can outperform our expectations, because I think we've not expected much this week.
Do you know what? I hope I'm wrong again.
Absolutely.
If you set your expectations low, you won't be disappointed, will you?
Very true. No, you're not Nigel Adkins' biggest fan, though.
No.
The power of negativity is so negative.
Yeah. The negativity of negative.
Wow. Yeah. What's he up to now? He got sacked for Sheffield United, didn't he?
I don't know. Not doing anything. He's not got a job at the moment.
Is he doing what I said he should be doing, selling cars? Because that is a job that was made for him.
Yes, quite possibly. I don't know. We'll have to speak to him. We'll try and get him on the show.
He probably thought that David Brent movie was a documentary.
Yeah. Oh, we love you, Nige. Anyway, as I said, for the final time of asking, that does wrap up the show. Keep an eye out for lots of stuff on thetirelessden.com over the next week or so. And as mentioned, we will be back next week. In the meantime, come on, you arse.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.